Once again, this is another segment of Reclaiming History with Livonia Mallory on WOOC 105.3 FM, the Sanctuary for Independent Media. I'm right here in Albany, New York, doing an interview with a very interesting person. For my listeners, tell them all about yourself and what brought you to the Capital District.
Well, good morning, and thank you so much for offering and inviting me to participate in this interview. My name is Pete Hill. I am the coordinator or project director of a program at Native American Community Services of Erie and Niagara Counties, the project being called All Our Relations. I myself am a citizen of the Cayuga Nation, which is one of the six nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. I belong to the Heron Clan. And I'm here in Albany today to offer a cultural competency training, talk about Native American people and issues for the Office of Mental Health here in Albany.
So cultural competency, is that what you said?
Yes.
What exactly is that?
There's a lot of discussion about what terms to use. Basically, the way I look at it is how to engage with folks from diverse communities other than a person's own, in a respectful way that helps people to accept and engage in the services that are being offered, but in a way that the service providers can understand some of the dynamics and history of the population whom they're serving, because a lot of those issues have major significance on their health issues, including mental health, physical health, all kinds of different issues and health disparities or health inequities, but also to do that, to understand why some communities or members from many communities may have issues of trust and things like that when we're talking about state or government funded programs.
So I like to talk about what are some of the languages that we should use, because, you know, some people say Native Americans, is that correct? Some people say Indians, is that correct? First Nation people, is that correct? I mean, we always have to think about using the right language when you're talking to another person across the cultural lines. How do Native Americans like to be referred to? Because I don't know all of the individual clans or what we call tribes. What's the correct language? Can we just start there?
That's a great question, because there's no... That's a great question, but unfortunately, there's no one simple answer.
Okay.
Basically, what's happening is that there's tremendous diversity of who Native American people are and what the opinions and preferences people may have. The terms like American Indian, I myself don't identify as American, even though I was born in Niagara Falls, New York, because of the sovereignty of our nations and Confederacy. So my citizenship is with the Cayuga Nation. So the term American Indian isn't accurate, in my opinion. And the term Indian is neither accurate. I have a good friend whose ancestry is from India, and when we first met, we kind of joked around like, here's a real Indian. Talk about him, my friend, and not me, because right. India isn't quite accurate either. So Indian isn't accurate. Native American is a little bit closer, but even there, if anybody was born in the United States, personally, I don't have a problem with anybody calling themselves from Native American, because they're native to this country called America.
Okay.
So that's not quite right, although we know we a lot of Native people who do prefer either one of those terms. Indigenous or First Nations are a little bit more accurate, but even the term Indigenous, if we think about it, we're all Indigenous to somewhere. If we go back in our family's ancestries and cultures, where you have that indigeneity that all of us can share. So Indigenous isn't quite accurate, but I like that term probably more than the other terms, because it connects us to the natural world and to the land. But again, everybody can claim some indigenous part of who they are if they go back in their families and their history. So even some of the names that we use for the nations and tribes, that's one thing among Haudenosaunee people. A lot of times people would prefer to use the word nation versus tribes, because we've always had a federal government-to-government relationship with the United States, and tribe, the origin of the tribe, that word, is more of a paternalistic view of Native people. So among Haudenosaunee and other nations as well, you'll see people referring to the Navajo Nation and things like that. So a lot of people are using the word nation more, but for Haudenosaunee, it's definitely generally preferred. But again, there are a lot of differences of opinions. But even the words like Cayuga, Seneca, and Mohawk, those are all English words. And a lot of those are the origins of those words may not be as supportive or informed as the real meaning of who we are. So what we see is that we see a lot of Native people referring and going back to our own languages to describe who we are. So for me,
so you were saying going back to your own language, because of course I think most New Yorkers have heard of the Mohawk tribe or the Mohawk Nation, but that, as you said, is not a Native American word. That's an English word.
Right.
So you are part of a particular nation, and say the name of the nation again. And who are these people?
My nation is, I'm a citizen of a Cayuga Nation, but again, Cayuga is the English word. So in the language, I would say Goyaguehano, and that describes where we lived and who we are. So when I say Goyaguehano, that's something that's very specific about where our people come from. The word for Seneca in the Seneca language is Onondaga. And if we think about Seneca, the word Seneca was actually a Roman poet back in like 300 or 400 BC. So we see a lot of Seneca people going to use the word Onondaga to describe who they are, because that's their language and it's very descriptive about who they are. There's no confusion when we use our own language to describe who we are.
And amongst the nations, everyone knows the names and what part of New York State or part of the Northeast that nation would have been a part of. So like New York is a state cut out, different from New Jersey, cut out by the British or by the Americans who came into this war, into this country. But I don't know if I can pronounce the native. Say it again for me.
Well, for Cayuga, it's Goyaguehano, but you can use
Goyaguehano.
So it's really close, yeah. But go ahead, feel free to use Cayuga and Seneca and, you know, the English. That's fine.
So for that nation, they controlled a certain section of New York State before the British came and before the Dutch came into this area. So you're from Niagara Falls area, the other side of New York State. Your nation, what part of New York would that tribe have been in control of before the British and the Dutch showed up?
You mean the area in Niagara Falls area? There, a lot of people refer to Western New York as ancestral homelands of the Seneca people. Okay. However, others, you know, there's Eries, there's Wyandots, there's Neutrals, there are other Native nations that are, you don't see those names around too much, because some of them have been adopted into the Confederacy or different nations of a Confederacy. And yet, the more of the reality is that a lot of those Native nations have been terminated, have been through, in the training today, we're going to be talking about the loss of life, because there are many places throughout the United States where there are no Native people left whatsoever, at least federally or state recognized nations of Native people. So the loss of life has been significant and tremendous, and that's one thing that a lot of people don't recognize, you know, because we're right now we're about 1-2% of the population across the United States on average, some places a little bit low, a little bit higher, and many other places it's zero or next to zero. But, and that's one thing people aren't always aware of. So that loss of life has been tremendous. So there are a lot of Native people, and in the training today, I'm going to show a map of the diversity of Native people across the United States. But then the reality of our land basis and where we are today in our population is extremely lessened through the historical trauma that we've endured, the, if you want to say, issues of genocide, whether it's actual physical genocide of wiping Native people out, because that was part of the discussion in American history, or the cultural genocide through residential boarding schools and forced assimilation and things like that. So there's a lot of things that we'll be talking about today in today's training that isn't always recognized or acknowledged in our history books. So there's another side to American history that many people aren't aware of.
So there's a lot of trauma, historical trauma that you're talking about. If you could wave a magic wand and have all of the power that you needed, what one thing would you change for your people tomorrow? If you could walk out of this building tomorrow and instantaneously change something for your people for the good, what would that one thing, you get one thing, what would that one thing be?
Yeah, that's another great question. The magic wand idea is really powerful. Probably the most important thing personally I would look at is having the world community disavow the doctrine of discovery that was first initiated in the 1400s, because that doctrine of discovery talks about how a group of European Christian Catholic people, not to disrespect anybody's faith or religion or any one group of people, but what that doctrine of discovery did is that it presumed that the people who created this doctrine of discovery were superior and better than indigenous people throughout the world. And they used this doctrine of discovery to justify a lot of the slave trade and the atrocities in Africa, a lot of the traumas that they've been impacted on Native people here in the Americas, all throughout the world. Whenever European people went out and so-called discover all these lands and these new lands and things that they never knew about, they automatically often assumed control or thought they could take control because they were so-called discovering those worlds. But the other issue, so that's one thing, but the other problem with the doctrine of discovery is that we are still living under that doctrine of discovery from the 1400s, because there have been federal court cases as recently as 2015, 2006, that refer back to the doctrine of discovery. So they're still using centuries-old doctrines and ideas that some people are superior than others to still justify taking Native lands away. It goes further to say how colonized a lot of people are, not just Native people, and how our thinking is. There's so much that.
So much.
Yeah, and that's one thing if I wish I could do. And there are a lot of efforts to help to promote that doctrine. It should be disavowed and abandoned. And I just wonder if they're successful, which obviously I hope they are, how that may change the worldview of a lot of different folks.
Well, we thank you for joining us on WOOC 105.3 FM. This has been another episode of Reclaiming History with Lavonia Mallory.